Well, good evening and welcome to this extra live stream on Monday, the 29th of November, 2021. Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics here. Great to have you on board. And really, really good that we've got Louis Christopher coming in a moment or two. As normal, let me just, before I bring him in, make the point that we don't offer financial advice or legal advice or even property advice on the channel. It's a general conversation. Please play nice in the chat room, no racial slurs. This is as of the 29th of November 2021, and use at Walk the World if you want to get my attention. I've also enabled Super Chat, which essentially means that if you want to, you can make a contribution or indeed make sure that your question gets to the top of the list. And without further ado, let me push this button. Louis, are you there?
Hi there, Martin. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thank you very much for spending some time and great to have you on the show. Very excited to work with you on your scenarios. A very big piece of work, a bit of piece of work that's got lots of media coverage. So it's great that you've got some chance to share it with us. Now, I wonder whether Edwin is there. Edwin, are you there? No, okay, interesting, because I accepted him, but he's not arrived yet, so we'll see whether we arrive shortly. Anyway, Louis, I guess just before we get into your scenarios, what's your take on the current status of the property market across Australia? You know, you've got all this data, you've got, I think you said 20-odd people working with you and for you on this, so you've got a really good finger on the pulse. What are you seeing?
Yeah, really good question, Martin. I think we're seeing mixed readings. Of course, the auction clearance rates, so you always get the headlines. In the Sydney and Melbourne auction markets, there's been a significant rise in auction listings in recent weeks. And indeed, last week was a record number of auctions being listed and scheduled for the week. There was actually some 5,000-odd properties scheduled for auction, and I would suggest that the auction clearance rate, will be publishing our clearance, final clearance rate tomorrow, as you're aware. I would suggest that we're likely to record another fall in the clearance rates. The clearance rates have been falling in Sydney and Melbourne over recent weeks, and the question in my mind is that a sign of a slowdown, or is it normal activity that we normally see during this time of year? So to give your audience some background, during late spring and into summer, you historically generally get a rise in auction listings and a fall in auction clearance rates. The question, of course, is what we're seeing now more than the norm? Well, certainly the auction volumes are more than the norm in terms of the record volumes. But that said, though, we need to consider the fact that we've just come out of a lockdown period. So what we're also may well be seeing is pent-up selling through a result of many vendors who could not sell in July, August, September, October, or very fearful of selling because we had a lockdown in Sydney and Melbourne, looking to sell now. So we could be seeing a bit of that. So it's a hard one to read whether we've really hit the top of the market right now, or whether this is just a temporary phenomenon, and when we get back into February, the new property season, we see a reduction in listings and the market continues on once more.
Yeah, and interestingly, of course, quite a few unit holders, I see them listing now, essentially because there's been a little bit of an uptick, but not a big uptick in terms of values. But quite a few of them are finding that the question of value of those units is really quite troublesome for them, and you know they're trying to get shot out of them.
Well, yes, yeah, so we're well aware, of course, of the issues, particularly in Sydney and Melbourne, regarding structural quality of unit blocks and apartments. It's an ongoing issue. The state government of New South Wales has attempted to address the issue. They brought in legislation not so long ago to make builders, engineers far more accountable. But still, the issues are lingering. They linger from the building boom that we had in 2016 and 2017 in particular. And there's no doubt that would have put off a lot of buyers and units in recent times. Now, that said, one thing that we noticed, and I think you noted this in a recent video you did yourself, there is definitely a valuation difference now between, say, Sydney houses and Sydney units. Sydney houses on our numbers are extremely overvalued right now, and we'll go into this later. Whereas Sydney units, yes, they are overvalued, but nowhere near as much. So someone that was long on property or a property bull potentially would look at Sydney units as potential as an opportunity maybe for next year.
Absolutely. Now, did Edwin manage to get in this time? Edwin, are you there?
I'm here, Martin. I was waiting for you guys. I thought Louis was combing his hair, and that's why I thought he was late.
Hey,
I've been sitting here for 15 minutes.
Great to see you. Anyway, thanks, Edwin. I know we got the time right now, so that's good. So we're just talking about listings, Edwin. Are you still seeing rises in listings?
Look, things have slowed down a little bit, not much, but we've started this week a lot, not a lot, but a bit higher than last week. So it's interesting that there's not a lot of properties being registered as coming off market post the weekend auction and the pre-sales prior to the Saturday auction sales. So we're basically tracking home listings at 7,500 at the moment, and potentially we could go back close or onto the 8,000 freestanding homes. But I just caught the tail end of that small discussion that you had with Lou, and what I've noticed is that the apartments have well and truly surpassed the apartment listings of 2020, and I went back to 2019, and they've also surpassed the apartment listings on market towards the end of 2019. So overall, in comparison, we're on par with 2019 and almost on par with 2020 figures. So let's see what happens moving forward. Obviously, it's now we're going to have the seasonal adjustment of figures, because not many people want to be on market during the Christmas break. That's if they're taking a break. But my call is that real estate agents could be well and truly working through Christmas, because vendors, as we've approached the agents, and as from our inspections of last week, agents are desperate to sell, and they are not going. They're not selling as quickly as they were, because vendors have to adjust their expectations. They have to adjust their expectations down. There's more competition on market, and buyers aren't jumping in as quickly. They are to the premium properties in specific suburbs, the well maintained ones, but not everything is selling as what it was, let's say, even 8-9 weeks ago.
Very interesting. Now let's come back to Louis and your scenarios, Louis. And one of the really interesting questions which I had beforehand was, how do you come up with these scenarios, right? What is the secret sauce that you use? Can you just explain, before you take us into the detail of your scenarios, how you do it?
Well, I guess I look at it a little bit like trying to pick a stock universe. So I try to initially come up with at least different 20 what-ifs that could happen next year. And definitely there'll be some extreme scenarios in there. For example, I had a scenario of hyperinflation next year worldwide. And then I had another scenario of rapid deflation. And then I had a scenario which made the top 10 of war with China. So it's all these various scenarios, and then I guess I, as best I can, I think them through. I think about the probabilities of each one. And then I narrow it down to effectively about a top six. And then from there, I rest on a final four. And then out of all that, we then say, well, what's our base case? And we end up with our base case scenario. But we still run with the top four scenarios.
And the point, I think that's so interesting, right? Because what you're recognizing is there's a huge number of variables and variabilities in this whole thing, right? So in a way, there's a bit of science, of course, but there's also a lot of intuition and a lot of a sense of, well, it depends to what extent this one is more important than that one, right? And I actually think that sometimes people have this rather mechanical view of scenarios, when in fact, really, they are more perhaps indicative of a number of different ways of this could play out.
Absolutely, Martin. Look, I think the future will always remain unknown. I certainly didn't predict COVID at the end of 2019. I don't think anybody did, other than there was always a general concern that we were overdue for another pandemic. But no, it certainly didn't make the forecast for that year. So there'll always be an X factor and always a degree of uncertainty. And you can run the hardest quant model you like, but in the end, a human's got to make a decision on these things based on all the information at hand. So last year, for example, war with China for 2021, I actually had that as our fifth most likely scenario out of our top four. Fortunately, it didn't happen. This for 2022, that's actually slipped down. And the reason why it slipped down, even though, look, the heat's still out there, is that China's about to have their Winter Olympics. And we think it's unlikely the CCP will go to war or invade Taiwan just prior to the Olympics or just after. We think that's pretty unlikely. So we've put that one down the rankings, put it that way.
Yeah, very interesting. And it makes the point also that these things do vary over time, right? And, you know, last Friday, who had heard of Omicron, right? And suddenly Omicron's now, right, the big one, right? And presumably yes. That may have a fallout effect, depending on how serious it is and whether there are more lockdowns and things. Nobody knows yet.
Nobody knows yet. But let's assume a darker scenario where we have another round of lockdowns, whether it's Omicron or, you know, another variant. So we did in our forecast discuss COVID a little. In our report discuss COVID a little. And we took the view that if we were to see another period of lockdowns, then the probabilities of an interest rate rise reduce in 2022. It would very likely mean the RBA would hold fire, potentially APRA would as well. So it's all been very strange how COVID in part has, you know, triggered this property boom, which started later in 2020 and well and truly hit its straps in 2021. And it's not COVID itself, of course. COVID in itself is a huge negative, but it's all the government stimulus, all the response, which has created this property boom.
Yes, and of course, even the Reserve Bank admits that interest rates, if they drop 100 basis points, that's a 30% lift in property prices or whatever. Reverse is also true, and we know, you know, credit availability and lending standards loose all push prices a lot higher. The reverse is also true. But you also make a really interesting point that if, in fact, things are a little bit less driven by momentum than they were because of COVID, then APRA probably just sits and does nothing, and even the RBA does nothing, right? So in a way, there's also the regulators don't have to react. They might just not do things that they were thinking of doing.
Yeah, well, that was our third most likely scenario, that we would enter into another period of lockdown. And our base case is that dwelling prices next year would effectively flatline. The actual forecast for the capital city average is a 0 to 5% gain. Now, I found that a number of reporters got confused by that. We had to explain that that was a net result for the year. So our general view was that there was enough momentum in the market now to see a formal rise in prices for the first quarter next year. But when we start getting towards mid-year, the view would be that the market would completely run out of steam, and so the September and December quarters of next year would be very likely we would see dwelling price falls, particularly for Sydney and Melbourne houses. But the end net result would be that, okay, rises in the first part of the year, falls in the second part of the year, you end up with effectively a net flat market. A number of reporters could not quite understand what I was saying there, but that hopefully your audience can.
I think so, and I think our audience is pretty smart with regard to some of these things. Well, why don't you take us through the sort of the headline scenarios, and I'm going to switch to me while you just switch over and get your screen sharing all working. It should all work well, I think.
No problem. Yeah, I'll bring up the scenarios themselves, and we can run through them.
While you're doing that, we'll just say that some of this information was shared quite broadly across all the media, I would say that Louis is going to hold some of the information back because, of course, it is a paid report, and so he's not going to give everything away. So if you want the full detail, go across to SQM and go buy the report. It is worth it. It's a very, very powerful report, and it certainly makes interesting reading. Okay, you've now got control of the screen, Louis.
Okay, so is that table coming through clearly?
Yep, certainly is.
Fantastic. Okay, so as we can see here, the base case scenario one, the main assumptions were, and I'll mention this in a moment, was firstly, cash rate remains unchanged. I know many in your audience will disagree with that. And I was on a knife edge about that between scenario one and scenario two. Quantitative easing is scaled back. Headline inflation runs at 3 to 5%. And further APRA action over and above what's already been announced to occur by June 2022. And so based on those assumptions, the city which we think would record the biggest rises is Brisbane, where we believe the market will rise by another 8 to 14%. And then the cities which we think will see some price falls, particularly in the second half of the year, would be Darwin, Melbourne, Sydney, and Hobart. Those are the cities where we're more negative on, particularly for freestanding houses in Sydney and Melbourne. So that's our base case scenario there. So compared to what CoreLogic's been recording now, where they've got annualized gains of plus 20%, it does represent a fairly significant turnaround. And to also be clear, we're not saying that this is like the total downturn. If we do get the downturn, this isn't the total result of the downturn. This is just for 2022. Now, we've held off from giving a forecast of 2023. Very simple reason, gentlemen. It's because we think there's just too many X factors at play. We cannot forecast that far out.
Just going back to your first scenario there, Louis, with your prediction of Brisbane being the best performer in terms of property values going up, you know, potentially to an X rate and 14%.
Yes.
Would that be based on the assumption that that because most of the people that are buying in Queensland are effectively people that don't need to get a loan, in other words, retirees, downsizers, and people that just want a shift in the migration from the southern states to Queensland? And secondly, I'd imagine the impact also is because relatively speaking, Queensland property prices are still way below Sydney and even Melbourne for that matter, and a lot of the people from Melbourne have gone up to Queensland, as we know from the other reports in the mainstream media. And would you say that would be one of the reasons?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah, I boil it down to three main factors why we're being more positive on Brisbane than the other cities, and overall why Brisbane's, we think, going to record the strongest rises out of all the capital cities for next year. Firstly, here and now, the current indicators, such as stock on market, such as auction clearance rates, asking prices, rental vacancy rates, they're all very bullish right now. We're not really recording a surge in new listings. We have recorded some rise in new listings, but nowhere near to the magnitude that we've been recording for Sydney and Melbourne. So overall, when we consider the leading indicators right now, they're still quite bullish for Brisbane. And our view is that Brisbane is finishing the year with a lot of momentum behind it still. The second view is that we believe next year we will see ongoing, very strong interstate migration from the southern states into Queensland. So we believe that there will be an increase in underlying demand for accommodation across 2022. And third is, and you've made that point just before too. And then third, as you've also made, is that relative valuations, while we believe Brisbane is recording an overvaluation right now, the overvaluation is nowhere near the levels that we're recording for Sydney and Melbourne. So there is still some good relative valuation between Sydney and Melbourne, not necessarily overall good in terms of valuations on housing per se. We think the Brisbane market is overvalued, but just nowhere near to the extent of Sydney and Melbourne. So there is a I guess a standard of living going, assuming you can get the job of your dreams through moving from, say, Sydney and Melbourne up to Brisbane.
What about in terms of investors? Because we noted on one of the previous shows with Martin, we have a group called the WeChat Chatters, and they are basically, we monitor approximately 16 WeChat groups, investment, predominantly investment groups, and the majority of those groups, most of them based here in Australia, some are overseas, but the majority of the groups that are based here in Australia were the obviously Chinese investors, because they're the ones that use the platform, and local Chinese, first, second generation Chinese in Australia. And we reported, I think it was about 8 or 10 weeks ago, Martin, from memory, that there was a huge chat in those groups for effectively the investors were buying, Chinese investors, local Chinese investors were buying in the Brisbane market, in the Queensland market, sight unseen. And as long as it was below 850,000, they were just literally buying sight unseen, just talking to the agents on the phone. And they even gave us an indication as to what suburbs and what areas of Brisbane they were predominantly focusing on. So that is something that, we noticed happening from 10 weeks ago or so. And also, I guess, in relatively speaking, going back to my other point, was that you're selling your home in Melbourne, or let's say for an average of $700,000-$800,000, whereas in Sydney it's $1 million, and you're with that you go up to Brisbane, Queensland, and the outskirts of Brisbane, and you can buy a house and have plenty of change left over. And it's not necessarily people that are seeking jobs that are going there. It's people that are basically making a life change and retiring, not necessarily looking for the full-time position.
Oh, I agree with you, Edwin. There's certainly some, in particular, some southern Brisbane suburbs on the railway line, actually, where the median house price is still in the 400,000 range. Mm-hmm. So there's some places offering some very good value indeed. Now, there will be some very good reasons for that. But, yeah, no, we still see relatively good value compared to Sydney and Melbourne in terms of Brisbane housing. So you raise a point about their, Chinese investors coming to the market. So that's really interesting on-the-ground information or additional information you're getting there where, you know, from the data side, which I cover, you do not really get that type of insight. We get to see the top down a lot, and I speak to trusted agents on the ground to hear what's going on. And that's, I think, a very interesting piece of intel. But from the leading data side, the leading indicator side on our numbers, Brisbane's still looking quite strong.
Yeah, and on that note, I mean, just to give our WeChat chatter as a wrap, because I know a lot of them watch us, Martin, as a report based on what they share with us. They also said that, and these are WeChat chatters that also have connections in mainland China, and we were talking about new variants and new strains and new viruses for that matter that were going to be due by November this year, Martin. And that was that was almost in the first quarter of 2021. And lo and behold, here we are. So it's interesting how all that information has come through. What the greater forces are doing globally, we don't really know unless you know who they are for starters and what they're trying to do. But it certainly has had an impact. You also alluded to before in your conversation with moving forward for 2022, our information and intel from all the different groups that we speak with, they've been talking about this insurgence or influx of PR holders. Let's say around about the 300,000 PR holders, and I'm not talking about the 2 million that the new Premier of New South Wales is talking about bringing into to New South Wales to take up the low paying jobs, but I'm talking about highly skilled professionals that are sitting on almost 300,000 permanent residency visas that have they've obtained over the last 2 years because they want to make Australia their home because they're looking for, obviously it's in the medical sector, in the accountancy sector, and also in the IT. So, and these people are coming in cashed up, and they're going to come in cashed up as of February or March, providing the international borders continue to remain open. So this is going to have potentially have another wave of property surges in, and I only focus on the Sydney market, as you know. But this is the chatter again through these groups, and a lot of these groups are in also based in America, Canada, New Zealand, and one or two in Europe. And these are people. Now, having said that, I've spoken to some of my contacts in CBA, and one in the area of IT, and where they're managing 200-250 people. So these are senior management contacts that I have there in CBA, and they are hard pressed keeping their employees that they're currently running, because they're getting offers of 10-15%, so above what they're being currently paid. And these are individuals, underlings that are on 175,000K plus that they're managing. And these groups are 150-200. And they've had to increase their wages this year, from the beginning of this year, by an extra 20% in order to keep them, because they're going, they're moving around. So there's a huge demand for IT. So there's going to be a lot of what we would consider as cashed out people that are potentially continue to push the envelope with predominantly freestanding homes in a lot of the suburbs of Sydney post the first quarter of 2022.
Well, a couple of observations there. The first is, of course, you have to go granular. And Louis, I love the way that you do go granular. You know, these generic averages of indices and things don't tell you anything, right? You have to go much more granular. The other interesting question, which came up in the chat a couple of times from people as they listened to what you were saying, was the question about future interest rates, right? So your scenarios seem to me, Louis, to basically have a range of scenarios with regard to interest rates, but nothing very significant over the next year. Will that be right?
Well, we did run now. Fourth most likely scenario was actually a situation where the Reserve Bank of Australia panics about inflation. So inflation continues to surprise on the upside. And the RBA is forced to move interest rates in 2022. And that the fourth most likely scenario was that they would be forced to lift the interest rate between 25 to 50 basis points by June 22. In other words, within 6 months from now. And on that scenario, that was actually our most bearish scenario. In that scenario, we see Melbourne dwelling prices fall by up to 8% for 2022. And Sydney prices fall by about up to 7%. The range is for Melbourne -8% to -3%, and Sydney -7% to -2%. So it's about timing. So if we were to see rate rises in the March quarter, then you probably would have a situation, depending on where it happens in the quarter, where the market effectively comes to a halt. And it really starts to slide. So potentially, if it was to happen in the March quarter, you would start to see price falls come through June quarter, September quarter, December quarters. And hence the reason why the numbers are a little bit more bearish on that scenario. Now, as mentioned up front, I was on the knife edge in terms of whether we would see interest rate rises next year or not. If you read the RBA, if you follow the RBA is still swearing black and blue, we won't see anything in 2022. Okay, fine. We know what the money markets are saying. They're now pricing in multiple rate rises, and really it hasn't changed that much since the RBA has made it clear they do not wish to go in 2022. So it's going to be quite a clash. Who's going to be right, the money markets or the Reserve Bank of Australia? In the end, I've gone with what the RBA has said. Ultimately, they make the decision. And so our base case scenario is that we don't get a rate rise, or if it does come, it doesn't come until towards the end of the year, like this time next year. And of course, from here, we can discuss, if you want, the inflation outlook overall, because as mentioned, we had a headline inflation scenario of 3 to 5%. And one of the things that we ran in our report, which I found interesting, is, you know, what does it mean for the housing market if we were to have higher inflation and the Reserve Bank of Australia stays behind the curve? What does that actually mean? Well, ultimately, that means negative real rates, Martin. Hmm. And I did run a very interesting chart, which I think I wouldn't mind sharing with your audience, about negative real rates, when it's happened in the past, and what has it actually meant for the market.
Great. Well, why don't you load that one up? I'll just grab full screen. And interestingly, Silent Renovator, thank you very much for the super chat, asked this question about opinions on inflation. Of course, you know, is it supply, is it demand? A lot of the supply side stuff, but a lot of the analysis that I'm looking at suggests that this inflation is now getting much more embedded. And of course, even Jerome Powell, in his most recent acceptance note, did actually for the first time say, yes, inflation is something they've got to worry about at the Fed. So gone is transitory, gone is short term, gone is now, you know, any idea this is just temporary supply side stuff. This is much more embedded. So it's a very important conversation. Got that chart?
Yes, I do. Okay. I'm ready to go when you are.
Yeah, go for it. If you share the screen, and I'll throw it back to you.
Okay, can everybody see this screen?
Yep.
Okay, so this was taken from longtermtrends.net, which I find it's a very interesting sort of charting-oriented, economic charting website. So this chart represents, firstly, nominal interest rates, which is represented with the black line. This is for the US, by the way, just to make it very clear. And I've got an Australian one as well. The red line represents the inflation rate. And then the blue line represents real interest rates. So basically, real interest rates for the uninitiated is effectively the nominal interest rate less the inflation rate. And you'll see here we've covered the period effectively from the beginning of the 1970s through to present day. And I think what's most interesting about this is the blue line itself. So in the 1970s, we had multiple periods where the real interest rate was actually negative, and it was up to negative minus 5%. Now, over that time, we had prices for real assets really take off. And when I say really take off, for example, Sydney house prices quadrupled in that decade. We had negative real rates in this country as well. You'll see here, we go to present time. We've also got the situation, this is in the States, less so here for now, but nevertheless, we've got negative real rates here at the moment, where we're getting a negative real rate of basically more than minus 5%. I would argue if this persists, if we continue to have negative rates of minus 5%, you are going to see the nominal price of real assets continue to rise upwards. What are your thoughts, gentlemen?
Oh, I think that's quite likely. It's interesting, a couple of people have asked questions about, you know, what happens with those fixed rates. People have got low fixed rates, so they're going to have to probably reset to higher fixed rates. But if, in fact, real inflation, you know, and interest rates get as disconnected as they currently are, this could create mayhem, couldn't it?
Well, it could. I mean, we've got to be very careful here. I mean, if the Federal Reserve keeps on the quantitative easing machine, keeps on funding the federal government deficits, you know, it's digital money printing. That's what's going on. And so in times of higher inflation, investors, anyone that's got some wealth wants to protect their wealth. And so what they generally do is that they will aim for real assets. And I'm not just talking about, say, property. I'm talking about gold, as you know, and other tangible real assets. And this is why inflation ultimately is bad news. It's bad news for those people who do not have wealth built up. They cannot do that. They cannot borrow money. They cannot purchase real assets to to protect themselves. And it ultimately, what it does is it increases the divide between the rich and the poor.
Absolutely. Well, of course, it erodes the value of any deposits, right? Because the returns on deposits just, you know, don't work. And it's interesting that my surveys show a lot of people are actually having to crimp their expenditure patterns because the current flows that they're getting from deposits are much lower than previously. And what it basically means is that it's really tough for a lot of people to deal with this. So inflation is really scary. And one of the things about inflation that I think people don't necessarily always recognize is just how it over time erodes the long-term value of everything, right? And as you say, it changes people's behavior. And we've lived through, you know, 15, 20 years of relatively low inflation now. If inflation really does get embedded and really take off, and, you know, there are some leading indicators to suggest it might. But I also think it's important to define the difference between supply-driven inflation, which is all about these, you know, supply chain issues, and the monetary flows, right? Because I would argue that a lot of the money that's being printed at the moment is not necessarily going into areas of the economy that's actually creating the sort of wage price inflation that we have previously. It's going into asset price inflation, but that also means that our assets are way overvalued, which means that if things go wrong, asset prices could drop, and they could drop quite significantly.
Well, that scenario could play. I would imagine that scenario would play out where you've got a situation where the central banks are forced to move ahead of the inflation curve, as what effectively happened in the 1980s for a period of time, where they cannot afford to run negative real rates. They've got to run positive real rates to put the brakes on inflation. And it's that point in time where you start to see, where potentially you could start to see some real falls. When I say real falls, I actually mean absolute falls, because potentially in inflationary times, everything's falling in real terms.
So it's
an interesting one, and you know, Edwin mentioned before that, you know, you've noticed that you're seeing a rise in wage pressures, particularly for skilled staff on the IT side. We've been seeing that too anecdotally. It seems as though the RBA may well get to that point next year where they've got a specific wage target. They may well actually hit that earlier next year than anticipated. And at that point in time, then they've got all the ammo they need to actually lift rates.
Gentlemen, from a novice economist point of view, right, more focused on numbers and on market and auction clearance rates as every and the like. But Louis, from that chart, and Martin, from that chart, my observation, that the chart that you just showed there, my observation in being actively involved in the just prior to 2000 in the sales side of the property market here in Sydney, if I followed that chart from a visual perspective, obviously from on face value there, I would say that the numbers on market, and you would be a great person, and you would have historical data of properties on market as the asset values rose towards the latter part of 2000 to 2010. It was because there was a lot less property on market, because a lot of at that time a lot of sales were for first-time buyers and the like, and a lot of investors that were buying into three-story walk-ups as opposed in some of the smaller subdivisions as well out west. Likewise, that seemed to follow through. We had the lull up until the 2013. In the next the next decade there, 2013, there was another lull until the Foreign Investment Review Board watered down the their policies and their mandates as to who can buy an investment property here in Australia, and then they basically 2014, 2015, every man and his dog became a developer and builder, because they could sell entire unit complexes to foreign investors. So again, we got a lot more activity we had a lot more activity, and then sort of values rose for a little bit, but then they started coming down again, and then they rose again towards 17 when things slowed down, and you know, political changes were making headwinds. So I guess in saying all that, I'd love to see an overlay of your historical data listings of properties on market in Sydney. Or if you got it for the other capital cities as well, from 2000 till now, it'll be interesting to see the correlation of those changes based on listings on market. And because what I'm seeing now is Martin and I have spoken about in previous podcasts, is that it's interesting how 500 or 1,000 new listings on market changes the entire sentiment of the purchasers and sellers, and it's such an insignificant amount given the fact that there's 638 suburbs in Sydney, but yet such a an extra property or 1.2 properties on market in each suburb just seems to change the emotional side from a buyer's point of view and also from a vendor's point of view. So I guess and I'll finish with this is, I would agree 100% with what you're saying, Louis, and providing that numbers don't drop away again, because take 1,000 properties off market in the Sydney market, and I'm just talking purely Sydney, and all of a sudden panic sets in, and every man and his dog wants to pay 15, 20, 25% over the top. It's really... Would you have that those historical numbers of listings on market, given your history in the property arena, to see what sort of correlation we get from those economic changes over the period of 2000 to now?
Edwin, unfortunately, we do not have the stock on market numbers back to 2000. We've got them back on our website back to 2010, and indeed, I've got the chart up here now if you want to have a look at it.
Oh, that'd be great.
So let me just bring that up now. Okay, can you see that?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, so this is once again off our website. So this is a freely available chart here. And as you can see, what we like to do with our listings, we split them by days on market. And so you've got the under 30 days, you've got 30 to 60, 90 to 180, and over 180 days. And then, you know, the accumulated amount gives you the total listings. And we recently put out a media release highlighting the October days of market where there was just a huge jump in listings. Now, we put that down to the opening, the fact that, you know, we've come out of lockdown, a lot more vendors were keen to get their property on the market since they're out of lockdown. And the anecdotal evidence for November is that we're likely to record a rise again based on the weekly auctions, at least. And I think we just mentioned this before you came on, that on our numbers, Sydney auctions, in terms of the numbers scheduled last week, actually hit a record high.
That's correct,
For what we can see. And nationwide, it was also a record high as well. But I think you've raised an interesting question for now, and it's running in my mind, is what happens when we get to the end of the property season. Looks like we'll have strong listings all the way through to Christmas, and then we open up in February next year. One or two things will happen, of course. We're still going to record very strong listings, or the listings will return us back to some type of normal level. Now, if they return back to some type of normal level, I would think, and assuming demand staying where it's at, it would mean potentially that, look, hey, we're not quite at the top yet.
But what's normal, Louis? Sorry to jump in there, but what's normal level? Is 2018 numbers normal level, or 2020 numbers normal?
If you run through our chart here, it would suggest that the long-term average is somewhere around 25,000 listings for the course of a month.
That's apartments and homes together, correct?
Yes, that's right. And let's have a look.
So at the moment, from 2019, and I'm just using domain figures, obviously, from 2019, we've been averaging around 18,500. So it's still a big drop. 2017, we were closer to the 24.
Yeah,
but the housing split up until
October, Sydney and other cities were recording very few listings indeed, and indeed, as part of all this, there's been a downtrend in the number of listings over the past 10 years. But it is interesting how we recorded this surge in October. I think we'll get another big number for November. By the way, Edwin, this is a split between houses and units that we've got through to the end of October for Sydney.
Right.
And you can see that the lift again, if I take off houses and we just look at units, that just shows you the unit listings that we've got. And yeah, it was a big rise we recorded for the month of October for units.
You mentioned earlier on in the discussion with Martin when I just chimed in, in your scenarios you're also one of the many factors that you were looking at or considering taking into consideration was a possible war with China and whether or not China would walk into Taiwan. As far as the WeChat chatters are concerned, 50% of the generals want to do it now. The other 50% want to wait. So I think it's not a matter of will, just a matter of when. And I tend to agree with you. They're not going to do it whilst they're having the Winter Olympics. But what we've been waiting for is to see what the chatter says in relation to the policy meeting that they held on the 8th of November. And it's a major policy meeting that happens every 40 years as to which way Xi was going to move forward with the nation for the next 40 years. And everything's quiet on the Eastern Front there in regards to the overall policies and how that was going to affect the apartment market here, because there's obviously a lot of investors from mainland China that are holding on to property. But anecdotally, what I had been seeing and talking to our Chinese agents in the North Shore, in the upper North Shore, in North Shore, and in the northeastern region, they're getting a lot of calls from their clients that are based in mainland China. To start preparing their units for sale. Now, whether it's just an after effect of their investments with Evergrande over there in China and the other investments that they have with Evergrande other than property, and they've had a fallout. But there's a case in particular now. There's a property in particular that we're looking at where there's five Chinese investors in one complex. Now they've gone mortgagee in possession. So that's going to be one of the interesting scenarios that we're going to be looking at very, very closely as to particularly with apartments and how the apartment market pans out for next year. But what we have seen in the last month or so, just a bit over a month, is a surge in apartment listings where those were almost tracking below freestanding homes at one stage, weren't they, Martin?
Yeah, they were, but that's changed now. And I just want to make the point, that chart, and by the way, a few people have asked for the link, Louis, so what we'll do is make sure that link's in the comments below for people wanting to go. It is freely available, that particular chart. It's one of the great things about the SQM site. There's a lot of great information that's there, and of course you can get more if you pay later.
Need to come to the front page of the site sqmresearch.com.au, and then there's a property tab there which they can either. I'll just do the share screen once again to show how to get there. It's not too difficult at all. So you go that's the front page of a website. Just go to property, okay, and then you look up total property listings. Default is postcode 2000. Then all you have to do then is click on region and city and then pick the city you want, and there's city. And we're back to that chart there. So a few clicks and you get there.
And you know what was interesting Edwin's point was that, you know, it's the marginal listing up and down, which is the significant thing. And that your chart shows that wonderfully, right? Because it's not like it goes from zero to 1,000, right? That there is this sort of band and they move up and down a little bit below the band. I think one of the things I might do is to run some analysis of price movements relative to listings, right? Because it will be really interesting to see just how those things, I suspect they'll be really well correlated.
Yeah, they are correlated. I've done that before. Mm. Particularly the period late 2017 through to 2019, and then immediately after the election as well. So this whole measure of listings, I like to look at it in terms of what are absorption rates like, I think. When you measure listings, you can work out whether absorption rates are rising or falling. When they're falling, you start to see a build-up in listings, so more sellers and buyers. When you start to see a fall in listings, that means absorption rates are most likely rising. Now, you can have a couple of months where potentially sellers have decided they don't want to sell in a weak market. They withdraw their property. And that's fine, and that doesn't mean absorption rates are rising at all or demand's picked up. But generally speaking, when you see a trend of falling listings, it does mean there are more buyers out there compared to sellers, and they're buying the stock.
Absolutely. Very interesting. And, you know, what I find fascinating, and I always love talking with you because you've got data at your fingertips, I have data at my fingertips, and in fact you can tell a lot from putting the information together. Now, before we just end, because we're going to close this in about 10-15 minutes time, I wouldn't mind just going granular. And I said to you before the show, I think Perth is a really interesting market to look at, and it's perhaps one that a lot of people won't necessarily be across. And interestingly, of course, CoreLogic did actually make some changes to the way that their indexing in Perth actually works. So Perth will be a really good one to look at.
Absolutely, Martin. Yeah, there's a lot of mixed signals out there in Perth. I'll share the screen now on our asking prices so we can see how vendors are looking at the local market.
Yeah, great.
And then we can have a look at a whole bunch of other indicators for it. Okay, so this is Perth weekly asking prices. And so the question is, are vendors feeling confident enough to lift their asking prices, or are they losing confidence in the market and so they're starting to discounting because perhaps they don't have enough buyers for their property and their property's been on the market for quite some time. So what we have here is, I'll just simplify this, I'll take out the number of bedrooms and have it all houses, all units, and then the combined number. So the full background is that Perth's actually been in a weak market really since 2014. And it went into a weak market at that time because we had a fall in commodity prices, which affected the Western Australian economy. And it's been a relatively weak housing market ever since. And indeed, there was a period of time where the median dwelling price, or the asking price, and it shows up on the median sold price, was effectively lower than where it was 10 years prior. So you can see there we've got a combined dwelling asking price of $590,000 for January 2020. And then back here in June 2009, it was sitting at $611,000. So it was this decade where, you know, as a Perth property owner, you haven't really made much of a return at all. Now, when we look at more current times, and you'll note here I can zoom in on the chart here, we've actually been recording a bit of a rise in asking prices over the last 6 months. So vendors on our numbers have been actually increasing their confidence in the local Perth housing market. Whether they've done that, whether that's the correct call or not for vendors, that's another matter altogether. But for whatever reason, they have been they've been gutsy enough to lift their asking prices. On the other hand, I've noted that CoreLogic, up until they made their change with the median, with their series on Perth, had Perth prices not really doing that much at all for the first half of the year like we did. And all of a sudden, when they came out with their updated index, I think they had Perth initially up 20%. Now, we just have not been recording that type of rise of Perth. And I'm not sure other bodies have been recording that either. But nevertheless, yes, there's been some confidence coming into the Perth market by vendors. When we look at stock on market for Perth, and I'm going to raise that now. So here's the listings, total listings here. And it's interesting. So overall total listings have been stable in 2021 and haven't changed much in 2020. But when we look at the old stock, so the stale stock, here's a chart just looking at the stale stock. There's been a big fall. So old listings have been falling away. And to me, that does suggest that the buyers have been out there looking to buy the available stock. But when I look at the new listings, so this is new listings versus old listings, right? It's been rising as well. So maybe the buyers have been out there and the sellers have been coming back pretty quickly. So there's been a significant rise in new listings and an ongoing month-on-month increase in new listings of Perth. Now, I think potentially that's put a bit of a lid on the capital growth in the local market there. Sellers have been keen to sell into the new buying activity, in other words. Mm. That's my take anyway. If you look at the rental market, well, let's bring it up here. Overall, very strong results. We were right on our forecast last year we had for Perth. We thought Perth rents would take off, and they largely did. We've got rents, asking rents for houses for the last 12 months up by 10.2% and for units 9.9%. Of late, in more recent months, it's kind of been slowing a little bit. But you wouldn't necessarily say that the total trend has changed and we're about to see a fall in rents. When we look at weekly rental listings for Perth, well, that tells a story. We're still recording a very tight rental market when it comes to listings, certainly compared to the years 2017 and 2018. So it's still quite tight in the scheme of things. I'll just stop sharing there.
Very, very powerful slides, aren't they, Louis? And I love the way that you can drill in and, you know, open up a smaller area. And I always recommend people go and look at your data because it really does tell the story. And, you know, my own research and surveys in Perth shows that a lot of people haven't seen any real recovery in value, particularly in some of the outer suburban areas. New home and land packages went up quite a lot because of the government stimulus, both the federal and the state government, you know, 55,000 to 60,000 up, simply because that's how much more money was thrown at it from the government. And we also know that if you go further north or further south into those high growth corridors, there are people there who've still sitting in negative equity from years and years ago. So for me, Perth is always a very much a patchwork. You know, you've got to go granular. You've got to look at the difference between units and houses, and you've got to look at different areas. And actually, that's probably true of pretty much other locations too. But because it's more masked here in other places, because prices have gone up more than here, whereas in Perth, because of this long-term, you know, sideways up and down movements, you can really see what's going on.
Yep. No, I would agree with that analysis. Mm. Yeah, it's an interesting one. Perth, on our modelling, is responsive to interest rate changes and changes in the availability of credit. It is naturally significantly responsive to changes in income and changes in employment, as well as naturally changes in global commodity prices.
Absolutely. And it shows you again how all these things are interconnected. Well, we're sort of coming towards the end of the time we allotted for this. Louis, any last thoughts in terms of, you know, what are the things that you're going to be watching for that might actually get you to revise the scenarios that you ran with?
Definitely going to be watching listings. So the play could be at the moment is that the market continues to slow down in Sydney and Melbourne without further APRA intervention. that is quite the possibility. If we may well have hit the peak now. I don't think I'll know that for sure until we get through to February and we see how the market opens up in February. But for the here and now in Sydney and Melbourne, you could definitely make a case there's more sellers and buyers right now. What I'm just not sure of is whether all that selling activity is going to last and this represents the new downturn. Now, if it is, and APRA do not need to step into the market, and we see a lift in inflation next year, I would have to say that the probabilities are that, yes, it's a slowdown, it's a downturn, but it's most likely going to be a softer landing than what we initially anticipated because APRA has not stepped in further. On the other hand, it shows you how sensitive the market is to changes in credit. Just lifting the serviceability test by 50 basis points creates a downturn in the Sydney and Melbourne market. That's a real concern. And one thing we have not covered today, and maybe we could finish this off because it's a chart I always love following, though I'm worried now it's going to take a long time to explain it, is just how much the Sydney housing market is actually overvalued. Do you think this is a chart worth sharing?
Yeah, absolutely. Go for it. Yeah, this is an important one.
I thought you might say that. All right, just bear with me one moment. I'm going to bring it up. It's a chart I do not share often, but it's an important chart, and I will explain it through. All right, can you see that chart? I've got it in my Excel file.
Yep.
Okay, so what it is basically measuring Sydney house prices to nominal GDP. The grey line there represents Sydney house prices, which have run back to 1986, started off with a base index of 100. Okay, and we've got now a reading of about 1300. Okay, the blue line represents nominal GDP, and the red bar lines represent the premium or discount of Sydney house prices to nominal GDP. So this is, a little bit more of a more sophisticated version of looking at prices to incomes, but taking into account all income, not just wages, but total Australia-wide income, okay? And the view is, of course, house prices cannot accelerate against income forever. There has to be an adjustment sooner or later. Usually it's a result of changes in credit for Sydney. Here's the thing I want to point out. Our previous high in terms of that premium, the house prices to income, was actually back in 2002. We now have a new high, which is past what we had in 2016, which was extraordinarily high. Okay, this is a new high. The market is extremely overvalued. Now, we say it's overvalued by 62%. Now, I must stress that doesn't mean that the prices will correct by 62%. But if nominal GDP were to stay just a constant to get ourselves back to nominal GDP, then you would see that type of correction occur. And in the past, of course, this chart has worked because there has been times in the not too distant past, back in 2009, when house prices did come back to nominal GDP. Okay. So my conclusion is the market in Sydney for houses is extremely overvalued, and therefore it is hypersensitive to changes in credit policy or changes in the price of credit or the availability of credit.
You're singing from my hymn sheet. That's exactly what I believe too. So my modelling is at least 40% overvalued, and in fact, in some areas, more than that. And I'm not saying it's necessarily a 40% correction, but it is way above where you would expect it to be on a nominal value basis, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And look, there's a few things we need to consider. Of course, housing formation has definitely reduced in Sydney. We're building more units and houses. So houses are in demand by an increasing population. We also need to consider what the regulators will do about this scenario. Let's assume we are right about the overvaluation in housing. Okay, we definitely know now, and I think many people acknowledge this now, that, look, the regulators, the powers that be, will do all they can to stop a housing price crash. for various reasons. What can I do on this cycle? Well, we've hit effectively zero on the nominal interest rate, haven't we? What could they do? They could stay behind the curve of inflation. This brings us all back to the conversation on inflation. What will they do on inflation? Will they stay behind the curve or will they panic and catch up?
It is a great question. And, you know, the other side of it, of course, is if, in fact, the banks start to get twitchy about lending standards and, you know, therefore lend less, and if incomes don't grow in real terms, and if, in fact, the international situation with regard to imports and exports continues to deteriorate because of what's happening in China, all those are negatives as to why it is that this is an unsustainable situation that we're in. And I agree with you absolutely that politicians and the RBA will do everything they can to stop this from actually correcting. One, because it actually reduces the wealth effect, which means that effectively there's less chance of getting re-elected. And two, of course, if prices do come back, then it's going to expose our banks dramatically to significant pressures in terms of the equity and capital requirements to drive their businesses. So they will do absolutely everything to try and keep this momentum. But the more they keep on doing it, the tighter the elastic becomes, right? And the more likely it is, at some point, it will ping back. And that's the question.
That's right. The more they intervene in the market, the more the chances of, the more the probabilities increase that they will make a wrong move.
Yeah.
Or get their timing wrong. That's the issue. I'm a general great believer in less intervention in the marketplace. Not zero intervention, but less intervention in the market, but they've been doing more, especially when the market goes into downturn. They want to prop it up with first-time owners grants and you name it, further cuts in rates. Okay, it is what it is. And look, you know, there are some underlying reasons why this has been happening in Sydney. There has been stronger population. There's been a limited supply of freestanding houses. But nevertheless, the market in Sydney, and if I put up the Melbourne chart, it does show the same thing. They are overvalued right now and they are ripe for a downturn.
Absolutely. It's the question of if and when and how. But I always say to people, you know, don't assume that you can continue on the same growth trajectory we had over the last 18 months. Interest rates were cut. Lending was actually very free. A massive amount of government stimulus. You can't go on doing that, right? And therefore, you know, the elastic.
Well, the problem is, what if they do keep doing it? What if, and this is the issue where it goes back to equity. Yeah. You can see a scenario where, sure, we don't have the big scale crash, but at the expense of social inequality, where the rich get richer, the poor get poorer, and we have significant social issues in our community.
Absolutely. And that is, of course, the point, that it does have a context, which is the social structure of society, and at the moment it's fracturing in my view because of the frankly bad policies that have been executed for the last few years.
Isn't the greatest indicator at the moment, Martin, outside of the normal indicators that you and Louis look at, the best indicator at the moment is the reports over the weekend that Mr. King was in shopping around for a new property, so the market's got to go up. So when your local politicians start putting the properties on the market for sale, that's when you know you got to get out.
That's a good point, Ed Brint. And did you have a last question for Louis before we close?
Yeah, I just want to look. It's a question that has to be asked, and all my followers have been DMing me and making sure that I ask this question, Louis. So it's not me. It's not me. I mean, I can't show off a beard like you do, but you know, they just want to know what hairstyles are you going to be coming out with in 2022, apart from your great figures.
And when I can't do much on my side, but quite clearly you can do a lot on your side. But please tell me that isn't a wig you're wearing there, pal.
No, but I'm actually...
Wigs are long gone, mate. You've got to own it, buddy. That's what you got to do.
I'm jealous of your beard. You know, that's it. I'm going to start growing one to see if I can get it as good looking as yours. But yeah, this is definitely mine. This is definitely mine. And depending on which way the market goes, I might we might be twinsies next year. I'm thinking if I can put up with summer with the long hair, if I can put up this summer with long hair and working on the we're growing the veggie on the veggie garden. If I can put up with it, it won't go. But if I get too flustered, it'll go and we'll become twinsies. How's that?
No problem.
Guys, thank you very much for your time tonight. And, I've really enjoyed speaking with you, Louis, once again. And I wouldn't mind pre-booking a chat with you in late February, early March, because I think we'll know a lot more by then as to how this is going to do. If you're up for it, we might do another one then.
No worries at all. Glad to be involved.
And just tell people where they can go to get the SQM data once again.
Just SQM research. Search.com.au bus report, which we've just released, and that data goes down to the postcode level. You'll see there's a link there on the front page there, Boom and Bus Report 2022.
Yeah, just give the URL again. You froze just at the crucial moment for some reason.
SQMresearch.com.au.
Yeah, you got there. And Edwin, thanks very much for your time. This is replacing the normal rant show that we do on a Monday evening this week, but we'll be back next week for our normal rant at the normal time. But great to have you on board as well.
Oh, look, it's been a pleasure. And it's an eye-opener for sure.
Great. Thank you both very much. Really great to have you on the show. I'm just going to take you offline now and then I'll close the show as normal. So thanks both. Cheers.
Thank you.
Thanks, Martin.
So there you go. That was a very interesting chat and I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you very much for all the comments. Just to let you know that we will be back tomorrow for our normal weekly live stream. That's with Damien Claston at 8 p.m. Sydney time. So mark your diary and make sure you're online for that. Got a lot of questions for Damien, particularly now with everything that's happening economically speaking. So I'll look forward to seeing you then. And as for the show today, thank you very much for watching. Hope you enjoyed it and check back for our next show next time. This is Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics signing off. Cheerio.